Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will meet the president and CEO of the public broadcasting system this hour, and she'll take your questions and feedback about public television issues and programming. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, May the 30th, and the president of PBS is Paula Kerger. She's in Wisconsin today meeting with Wisconsin Public Television and radio staff and friends of public broadcasting, and we are happy to have her with us this hour. We'll talk about issues facing PBS, including funding issues, new programming and educational initiatives that are in the works, and we'll also talk some about the upcoming changeover from analog to digital TV. And we will welcome your questions and your feedback for her at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Paula Kerger, president and CEO of PBS, joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to Wisconsin.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah. This is a visit just to kind of hear from Wisconsin Public Television staff and donors.
Yes. I've been in this job about 2 years, and I have spent time in that period visiting with stations around the country to get a better sense of what stations are wrestling with in the communities and how we at PBS can help the stations do their work that much better in communities. You know, we're a little different. We're not a broadcast network, and I think people sometimes are confused about what PBS is. We're not like NBC and ABC and CBS. I don't own any television stations. I don't control what any public television stations do. Public television is really comprised of 350 local television stations across the country, each run by local boards, each with local control, and PBS is their membership organization. Stations around the country formed PBS as a way to create scale and aggregate resources so that we can do things as an entire system that an individual station wouldn't be able to do, such as create programming like Nature and Great Performances and Masterpiece Theater and Sesame Street. And PBS also maintains the interconnection that ties all the stations together so that a single station can receive a broadcast that every other station around the country receives as well.
Yeah, but you do not tell Wisconsin Public Television where to put Nature on the schedule or whatever else.
No, in fact, I have a little bit of a joke. I say I don't run 350 stations. They actually run me.
You know, we probably have listeners with us right now that might watch stations that are part of Wisconsin Public Television, but there's also Milwaukee Public Television. There are public television stations that our listeners might see in Duluth, Minnesota, for that matter, and in Iowa and Illinois. So are all of those stations a lot different than each other?
You know, it's interesting. As every community in this country is a little different, every station is a little different. And every station, and that's, I think, what makes us so special, because every station thinks about how they could best serve the people in their community, and that's how they build out their work. So there are commonalities, of course, but that's what I think makes us different and unique in an increasingly consolidated media landscape, is that we are, in fact, very local.
Yeah. And you're impressed with what you see happening with Wisconsin Public Television.
This is an amazing station. I was in an event last night, and I told some people there that the people in this community should be very proud of this station, WHA, and the work that happens within Wisconsin Public Television, because it's really public television at its best. The ties the station has made to the community, the outreach that it's done, is actually a model for the country. And in fact, that's one of the reasons that I'm here, to really see it firsthand, because I think so many stations could learn from the work that is happening here and really exploring ways to better serve the people in their own community, looking at how Wisconsin Public Television serves the people.
Yeah. And one more point of clarification, too, before we go on. Sometimes people think I work for NPR, or sometimes they think I work for PBS. There is a little bit of confusion. PBS is the TV part of it.
It's the TV part. And in fact, sometimes people think I work for NPR.
Yeah, yeah.
But NPR is radio, and we have, we're kin, you know, and in some parts of the country, the public television and public radio stations locally are part of the same organization as they are here, and in other parts of the country, they're separate. it. But NPR is the radio version of PBS. It is the service organization that provides radio stations with some content, and PBS is that on the TV side, and I run PBS.
Yeah. We're going to check our weather forecast, and then we will talk some about the future of public broadcasting and what it holds and our guest's vision for PBS. Paula Kerger, our guest, president and CEO of PBS in Wisconsin today, and here to talk with you. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking this hour with Paula Kerger, president and CEO of the Public Broadcasting System, PBS. And Paula, what is the future of PBS? What's your vision of the future for PBS?
Well, this is a really extraordinary time to be involved in any media organization, because the world is changing around us. As anyone who spends any time looking at technology, you're well aware that the opportunities to watch what we traditionally did in our living room staring into a box have shifted. You can watch television, of course, on a television screen that could be 6 inches or could be, 100 inches. Mm-hmm. You can also watch video on your laptop. You can watch video on an iPod or a cell phone. And so for us, as we think about the work that we produce, you can also watch programming that is scheduled, and you can also watch programming that is on demand. You can download material as you want it. And so it's exciting for those of us that work in public television, because we create content that we really want to push out to as wide a possible audience. We don't care as much if people are sitting home on Monday nights at 9 o'clock watching a particular program. What we do care about is that the material that we produce reaches as many people as possible that can benefit from it. So we are looking at all of this new technology and trying to figure out how we can reach more people where they want it and how they want it.
Yeah.
And so the challenges of it, of course, are it makes you think differently about how you're distributing material. It makes you think a little differently about how you let people know how to access it. And you have to think a little differently about how you make sure that people understand that wherever they're getting the material, that it's being brought to you by Wisconsin Public Television, for example. And so that we maintain that relationship, that donor relationship, that membership relationship that has really built the station. You know, almost every station in this country is majority supported by viewer contributions. And so being able to make sure that we maintain that bond is also causing us to think a little differently about how we're, communicating to our viewers. And so we're spending time right now really looking at all the different ways that we can push material out. We're also spending a lot of time thinking about February of next year. And February of next year is February 17th, 2009, to be specific, is an important date for anyone that's listening to me now who watches television over the air. That means those of you that watch television without a cable box or without a satellite dish. If you have an antenna on your roof and you're watching television and that's how you receive the signal, and you have an older television set, you need to do something before February 17th of 2009. You need to get either a new set, which I'm not encouraging you to buy if you don't want one, or you need to buy a converter box. And this is not a cable box. This is just a converter box that you hook onto the back of your set so that you can continue to receive television signals. The federal government has mandated that the turn off of analog television, which is the way that you are currently receiving television, and that is being replaced by digital television, which at the end of the day you will be very happy with. It gives you a cleaner signal. You won't have all that ghosting that you may experience now. You'll have the ability to actually see more channels through digital television. And it's similar to the migration. If for those of you who like the two of us who remember the move from black and white television to color, programs are being distributed now in digital, and so there are people out there that are currently watching over-the-air digital television. But unlike that transition, analog television is actually physically being shut off, so you won't have the ability to keep using that old set unless you add that box.
You, in fact, at least I caught this spot on Wisconsin Public Television just the other day. It features the two personalities from This Old House.
You know, this TV is 10 years old, and the picture still looks great.
But if you watch TV using an antenna, you might need to make some changes.
That's right. In February 2009, America is improving the way it broadcasts television.
The new system looks great, but to watch it on your old TV, you're going to need to buy a converter box.
Fortunately, you can get a coupon to help you pay for the box.
And your favorite PBS shows will look better than ever.
So it will, if you have cable or satellite, you're okay. But if you have an old TV with rabbit ears, you need this converter box. Yeah. And once that changeover happens, then it'll look better and we'll have a lot more choices.
You will. Mm. And let me explain how that works because it sounds a little bit like magic, I know. Mm. But each television station has a certain amount of spectrum bandwidth that they distribute their signal. Digital television, and as you know, if you think about CDs and so forth, you can put a lot more material on a CD than you used to put on an old LP record. And so stations can put more content through that same pipe. And what many stations, including Wisconsin Public Television, is doing is they're currently broadcasting several channels. They're broadcasting a children's channel. They're broadcasting a channel called Create. They're broadcasting something called the Wisconsin Channel, as well as the regular standard public television channel that everyone knows and loves. And so if you get your converter box, you'll be able to watch all of those. And, you know, the other over-the-air broadcasters are also, some of them are also broadcasting multiple channels. So your old set, the picture on your old set will look better, and you'll have access to more content. So as that spot indicated, you can go, get a coupon from the federal government. The coupons, you can get two per household because you need a converter box for each set. You can get two per household. Coupons are worth $40. And the boxes run, there's different manufacturers. The boxes run anywhere from between $40 and $60. You can go into any electronics store and they'll show you the boxes and hook it up to your set and you're good to go.
We have some callers who want to talk with you. Let me bring in Joe from Eagle River. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Morning, Joy, and morning, Paula.
Good morning.
I'd like to make a pitch for maybe a change in the rules. My wife and I live out in the woods, so we have Dish Network, and we subscribe to a package of local stations, network stations out of Wausau and Rhinelander, and then our PBS feed comes from Park Falls. Prior to that, we had a package that included the East Coast stations, and there was a marvelous PBS feed. I'm not sure where it came from, the East Coast, but it was wonderful. And when we took this local Wisconsin package, I called Dish and said I would be more than willing to pay for and would like to receive that national PBS feed, and was told that that can't be done. I don't know if it was a law or rule or what, and I would just encourage you to see if that somehow could be changed, because there's some marvelous PBS stations, and yet we're not allowed to subscribe to them, and I'm assuming that my tax dollars are helping to fund those.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the story with that is that we put up that feed, that PBS feed actually emanates from us, from Washington, and we put up that feed to the satellite companies prior to when they were offering local public television stations, and that was in order to give viewers across the country the opportunity to see public television, and that when in each market, when the satellite providers started offering local channels, that national feed was replaced by the local public television service in the community that you live. And so the rule, so to speak, is actually the bandwidth of the satellite provider who doesn't want to offer up a national service at the same time they're opening up a local service. So the national was to sort of get you past the hump of when the local into local, which is what it's called, was not available in the areas where you currently live.
Yeah. Speaking of funding, there is another threat to funding to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This happens from time to time in Congress to cut spending. Sometimes CPB funds are targeted, and that's on the table again. How significant is the funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to PBS?
Well, it's significant to both public television mm-hmm. and public radio. Our funds from the federal government come actually to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, mm-hmm. which funds both radio and television. And, you know, it represents nationally about 10% of our funding, 10 to 15% of our funding. And what stations then do is that they go out in the communities and then they raise the rest. You know, we're different than the other public broadcasters around the world. Probably the best known of the other public broadcasters is the BBC. Mm-hmm. They are funded on a different model. They're actually almost wholly funded by the government, and they're funded on a tax that people in Great Britain pay on their television sets on an annual basis. And they're funded about tenfold greater than we are. Our funding for public television and public radio ends up being about $1.50 a person mm-hmm. per year, and that we then take that and as I said, use it as seed funding to try to you know, leverage and raise additional money to bring the services to the communities that we cover across the country. It's critically important money, and I will add that, you know, we have been fortunate to really receive bipartisan support over the years, but every once in a while we do run into a snag, and we are continually making our case on the Hill as to why we feel that the services that we provide are profoundly important. You know, as I travel around the country, I can tell you that in many parts of the country, the local public television station, the local public radio station are the only local broadcasters left. You know, with more and more media consolidation, you have television and radio that is, as some would call it, owned by someone from away. And you feel that very keenly with local news. And so I think it's profoundly important in this country that we have and we maintain a system of local television and local radio that is designed not to be driven by commercial considerations, but is driven by service to community. And that's why I feel so passionately about the importance of public television and public radio, even in an environment where some might say, you know, there are enough options, you know, you're not as necessary as you were when there were just the four networks.
We'll pick up on this as we return from news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and we will take more of your calls, your questions, your feedback for Paula Kirger, President and CEO of PBS. She's in Wisconsin today, meeting with staff and friends of Wisconsin Public Television, and here to talk with you this hour. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll talk more about funding issues facing public television and some new initiatives that PBS is undertaking coming up after the news. And there's a little more modern take on the theme to Sesame Street. We play that because we're talking with the president and CEO of PBS, the public broadcasting system, this hour. Paula Kerger is in studio with me. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:36 on this Friday, May the 30th. Paula Kerger in Wisconsin today, talking with Wisconsin Public Television staff and friends and others, and with you too, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. So children's programming is something that a lot of people associate with PBS, the finest children's programming anywhere, especially Sesame Street. You have some new plans along those lines?
We do. We started a couple years ago really taking a very hard look at our entire children's programming schedule and really thought about how we could create programs and really move our schedule into programs that have a deeper educational curriculum base. I mean, I think everyone recognizes the contributions that Sesame Street has made to now generations of children and now adults. And so we realized that, you know, we've done good work over the years and perhaps we could do even better. So we have been focusing on a couple key areas, literacy, math, and science in particular. And so over the course of the last 2 years going into the upcoming season, we will have 8 new shows in the schedule. One of the shows that we introduced a year and a half ago, Curious George, is actually the most popular children's program. So if you have children or grandchildren, you probably know this fact.
Wow.
We have some wonderful programs that we've brought in, including programs like Word World, Word Girl, Super Y. Super Y is extraordinarily popular. We launched it this past season. The creators of Blue's Clues worked with us on that, and again, it inspires and excites children about reading and learning. As we look to the upcoming season, we have a couple programs coming into the schedule, including Martha Speaks, which is based on the very popular children's book about a dog who eats alphabet soup and suddenly develops the gift of speech.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And in addition to that, Sid the Science Kid, which is coming to us from the Henson Company. And Henson, as you know, is the creator of the Muppets. And as the name implies, this is a program for young children to get children interested in science and looking at the world around them. And the final program that's coming into the schedule, which I think will warm the hearts of many 20 and 30-somethings, is the return of the Electric Company. And as you referenced in listening to the more up-tempo Sesame Street, this is a contemporary Electric Company that lifts a lot of the elements of the original Electric Company, but is, I think, going to be of interest to, you know, to children of today. So we're really excited about all the work that we're doing on air. And then combined with that, you know, the PBSKids.org site is, if you have children and you haven't been there, you should visit with your children, not only to allow them to go through the site, and we have programming that's geared towards younger children as well as older children, but also there's a parent site there. And as I travel around the country, I talk to a lot of parents who are really interested in content that will help them work with their children and so forth. And it's these are wonderful resources. And we, as we think about our work moving forward, particularly in this multimedia landscape, we are very excited about the potential of not only creating extraordinary broadcast programs, but also looking at the potential of the web, because the thing you can build on the web with children's content are games. And I think every person that has a child knows that children are addicted to games. And wouldn't it be extraordinary if we can move more children into games that are educationally based and are not violent? And that is what the work that we have online now represents. So I, you know, I encourage viewers that haven't been there to look at some of the work we're doing, and we're looking to develop more and more programs and content as we move forward in this space.
And we have some callers who have some thoughts on PBS programming. Karen in Milwaukee is with us first. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I'm hoping that when we do develop some of these good shows, especially for early teens, that's a rare category.
Yeah.
that we don't lose them to cable, that we really protect them. Things like Ghost Riders and the Carmen Sandiego show,
that
Magic School Bus, that we don't let it go away. I'm concerned about great performances that used to be on every week where we showed, new performers and classical things across the nation, things that are happening. Now it's a once-a-month special or something. It's hardly, it's hard to find. The Pledge specials that we used to do that were sort of classic talent shows that introduced, were really popular, and we just don't seem to be making them anymore. In Milwaukee, we have a wonderful, world-renowned symphony orchestra show, and it's too expensive to, tape those programs, but we'd never offer them to national PBS. You never get, the rest of the country never gets to see it. We're getting a new concertmaster, and somehow those things have to be less expensive for the local communities to give to you.
Yeah. Karen, thank you so much. Maybe you can talk some about the arts programming.
Yeah, I would love to comment on that, because I agree with you, Karen. I think that arts programming is profoundly important, and I have made it a priority of mine as I took this job to really try to focus public television on increasing the amount of arts programming. I've started some planning work to really look at how we can increase the amount of arts programming. And I agree, there's extraordinary music and performance and actually visual art as well that's going on across the country. And I grew up outside of Baltimore and had a public school education in which arts was a very important piece. And I know that is not the case in a lot of parts of the country now. And so I feel it both in terms of exposing children as well as making sure that people around the country realize that the arts are created by everyone for everyone. I actually spent time in Milwaukee last year, and I met with a number of people within the arts community there. And as part of what Milwaukee Public Television has been thinking about in sort of building out its work, and what I'm hoping to do with this arts initiative is to really have, as you've indicated, a regular weekly presence for the arts on public television. The reason that we have not done as much of it as of late is that the cost to produce arts programming is extraordinary. But we've had a couple important breakthroughs in the last 2 years, including the Metropolitan Opera broadcasts. And I think that there's recognition now that we need to work together, the arts community and public television, to bring more arts into the schedule and to really give more people access. Because you've got the challenges of people that that, one, have never experienced various art forms and don't necessarily realize that it is for them. The second is you have people that have geographic limitations that can't necessarily travel to see symphony performances. And you also have the economic realities of so many people. I tell this story. We worked with a young guy in San Francisco that was with the San Francisco Ballet. And because we taped a broadcast of Swan Lake with San Francisco Ballet, and he indicated to me that the first experience he had of public television, of ballet, was watching public television. And this is a kid that grew up in New York City, where there is a lot of opportunities to see dance, but for economic reasons had never had that experience. So I think it is an important piece of what we want to do, and it is one of my priorities.
Yeah. Thank you, Karen, for the call. We will talk about other programming initiatives, talk some about public affairs programming after we check the weather, talking with Paula Kerger, President and CEO of PBS, 1-800-642-1234, and Madison 263-1890. If you have any feedback about public television programming or other initiatives going on at PBS, or any feedback, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up after 8 o'clock, it's the Friday Week in Review. We will welcome in two guests from different perspectives to talk with you about the political news of the week, as we always do every Friday in our 8 o'clock hour. So stay with us for that. And join in if you have a question or a comment for Paula Kerger, President and CEO of PBS. She's with us through the end of the hour. George in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Morning. I have a suggestion for the upcoming presidential campaign election as we go towards November. I would hope that PBS might sponsor programs that would be sort of like done in sort of a frontline format, focusing on particular issues, maybe do like a series of eight, maybe like a whole program on health care, basically looking at how each of the major candidates would try to address it. So you might have one on health care, taxes, mm-hmm. The economy, education, you know, Iraq, et cetera. I think that, you know, like the NewsHour probably will do something like this, but unfortunately, I don't think it would get the audience, you know, because only people that usually tune into the NewsHour would probably be looking at that. But if you made it something special, it certainly would be much more advantageous than the so-called news in depth things that last 3 minutes long on the network news.
Right. Yeah, we get to George. So George wants the issues in the presidential race covered in an in-depth documentary type format.
And George, you'll be happy to know that we are doing that. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Frontline will be doing a coverage which they call The Choice, which in fact is going to look at these issues in depth. This is clearly an exceptional period that this country is going through, and this election thus far has been fascinating. You know, this is clearly one of the most important elections, certainly of my lifetime. And we have actually been working not only across the various programs, including, and you're right, the NewsHour. The NewsHour, in fact, is going to be doing sort of gavel-to-gavel coverage of the from the conventions, and they have been, as you know, crossing the country, covering the election in great detail. All of our news and public affairs programs are going to be focused on the election. We're working closely with NPR on content, not only for broadcast, but particularly online. And I encourage you also to go online and look at some of the material there. And that obviously will accelerate as we get closer and closer to the election. And we will be looking to do other specials and other coverage as part of our prime time in order to make sure that, and I agree with you, I think that what I think is going to be important is to participate in this election, not watching it as a horse race, but really looking at the substance of the issues and being able to lay that out. Because I think that as we look towards making these important decisions, and informed citizenry is obviously what democracy is predicated upon. And I think that it's an obligation that we feel keenly, both in television and radio, to make sure that that the issues are being covered and not the the aspects of this campaign that are trivial.
Thanks a lot for the call. John in Gays Mills is with us now. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you? First off, your show is really good, and you know I'm an avid listener of public radio. It's information I can trust. Sometimes I feel from the mass media, you know, where it's accurate, it's, a lot of it's what's not said. One main key person we'd love to hear on public radio, and when I say we, I say, you know, quite a few of us, is a guy named Noam Chomsky.
Yeah, we've had Noam on, John, and I appreciate that suggestion. The only reason I'm kind of cutting it short is that what our focus is this hour is public television broadcasting and not necessarily what you hear on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. But what about, I'm wondering, Paula Kerger, I've heard some groups who say that public TV, including the NewsHour, talks to some mainstream guests, middle-of-the-road guests, and not necessarily voices on the fringe that you might not hear anywhere else. What do you make of that criticism?
Well, you know, it's funny. I for 13 years I ran a I was the station manager of our public television station in New York City, and one of the things that I used to monitor pretty carefully is you know, sort of viewer feedback. We'd look very carefully across our broadcast schedule and look at the voices that we bring forward. And I think that what we try to do is really do represent a multiplicity of voices. I think, we live in such challenging times, and I was talking to a group of, about a week or so ago, and sort of lamenting the fact that we as a society seem to have difficulty sitting around a table, whether it's a dining room table or in a public forum, and having engaged discussions about issues, and what seems to devolve into screaming matches. And so what the NewsHour has tried to do is to have thoughtful discussion around the issues and to bring different perspectives and different voices in. We have other voices that that participate in our news and public affairs discussion. You have Washington Week and some of the folks that Gwen Ifill brings around the table. You have mm-hmm. people like Bill Moyers and some of the voices that he brings around the table. Mm-hmm. You have Now with David Brancaccio. And I think that as you look across the spectrum of what we try to offer up, I hope that people that watch us regularly do appreciate the fact that we do try to reach out beyond what one would consider sort of just the middle of the road guest, and have the kind of discussions that I think are important for this country.
Yeah. Edith and Madison, in
fact. Oh, thank you. Oh, I just turned my radio on, and I'm so glad you're on. I have to tell the whole world, PBS is the only network I watch. And I am so glad that you have Bill Moyers back. I wouldn't go anywhere on a Friday night. I sit with my pad of paper, take copious notes of everything that is said. My second favorite is Frontline. I love Masterpiece. I love British comedy. I love shows like Ballycasangel and Monarch of the Glen, on and on and on.
Yeah, Edith, thank you so much for calling. You got a big fan there.
Thank you, Edith.
Yeah, but what about these are programs that are unique to public broadcasting. They're not programs that you can find on cable.
No, they're not. And it's funny. People sometimes, I have a little gimmick that I do, and it's not really even a gimmick. When I go to meet with groups of people, and frankly, when I've gone to the Hill, I always get someone that asks me the question, well, how are you different than anyone else? I mean, we have the History Channel, mm-hmm. we have the Arts and Entertainment Channel, we have the Learning Channel, and they do what you do. Well, I always say to people that make those comments to me, do you actually watch a lot of television? Do you actually watch what's on these channels? Because, and I want to be clear, there are good programs on all of the channels that I've just mentioned. They are not consistently what public television delivers. The Arts and Entertainment Channel actually doesn't have any arts and entertainment on it anymore. That I can actually say, flat out. In fact, if you don't know what I'm talking about A&E. They do, a lot of CSI reruns and, mm-hmm. and so forth. Bravo, which actually was the sort of the next cable channel that was created to do arts programming, really has started with a lot of arts and now has shifted and does a lot of programs like Top Chef and Project Runway and so forth. Right. Actually, programs I happen to enjoy, but aren't quite the same as, the Milwaukee Symphony. The Learning Channel is TLC. They actually do a lot now of sort of home improvement type of programs. And so, History Channel does some documentaries that are similar, but most of them not to the level of scholarship and detail that we do, because at the end of the day, these are all commercial operations. Right. And they are going to monitor and determine their success based on their ability to sell underwriting and advertising. And we're not in that business. Yeah. And so Ken Burns makes his home on public television because we allow him to tell his story in the way that he wants to tell it. And if he needs to take 20 hours to tell a story, then we let him do it. And we are pleased to have him.
The War was quite the success?
The War was an amazing success, both in terms of the broadcast, but also the local documentaries. Mm-hmm. And I know the ones, the Wisconsin War Stories, which actually preceded the War. Mm-hmm. I sometimes kid Ken that he got his idea to do the
From
War
Wisconsin.
Based on
mm-hmm.
Wisconsin's work. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was a it was an amazing success, both in terms of the local documentaries that were created around the country, as well as oral histories. And his next project, his next big project, which will be out next year, is on the National Park System. And it is a sweeping, I would say, quite emotional story of an important part of our history. And we are all very much looking forward to that coming into our broadcast schedule next year.
Running very short on time, less than a minute to go, a caller is concerned about future funding of public broadcasting. Are you concerned?
I am always concerned. We are a tenuous organization at times because our funding comes from many sources. I spend a lot of time making sure that people understand that if you care about public television, you need to play a part. You need to support your public television and public radio stations. You need to let your legislators know that this is important. Legislators respond to constituents, and so it is never good to assume that public television and public radio are always going to be there when you flip on the dial. And so if you do care about this work, you need to be engaged in our partner in making sure that it stays strong and vital now and for our children and our grandchildren and generations to come.
Yeah, I don't know if it's still there. I think it is. Yesterday I found on the Parade Magazine website a survey that Parade is doing on should public broadcasting continue to be funded with taxpayer dollars. And as of yesterday, it was 80% saying yes and about 20% saying no.
Yeah, and in fact, the Roper Organization every year for the last 5 years has done a survey and also has echoed that same sentiment.
We want to thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Joy. It's wonderful to be here.
Paula Kerger, President and CEO of PBS. We thank her for being with us. We thank Karen Prager and Malcolm Brett for helping to produce this hour, and Michelle Kofel for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.